evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, February 19, 2015. South Sudan's parliament takes up the amendment to postpone elections and extend President Kiir's term in office.
This bill is drafted in accordance with the power vested in the president under Article 101F, and that is the power to initiate amendment to the bill to the constitution.
And the former military spokesman of the SPLM in opposition arrives in Juba with a message of peace.
I'm happy to be back after nearly 2 years, and we are taking the search for peace to greater heights. It has taken us 14 months to get to a meaningful corner.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Now we go to Addis Ababa on the latest talks on South Sudan. Peace talks for South Sudan were supposed to resume in Addis Ababa today, but reports from the Ethiopian capital indicate they are unlikely to because most of the delegates have not yet arrived. The warring side last met in January on the sidelines of an African Union summit. At those talks, President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar recommitted to a one-year cessation of hostility agreement and signed a power-sharing proposal. The mediators of the talks, the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, said the two sides should reconvene this week and gave them up to March 5th to iron out any remaining differences and reach a final peace deal. Since then, however, fractures have become apparent in Machar's rebel group. Yesterday, Machar's longtime military spokesman, Lul Roy Kong, announced in Nairobi that he is breaking away from the former vice president's SPLM opposition group. Roy says he decided to form a new movement because he says Machar is focusing too much on returning to power and not enough on the needs of the people of South Sudan. Roy was the military spokesman for Machar's rebel group ever since South Sudan plunged into conflict nearly 14 months ago. Now that he's back in Juba, he says he intends to actively work to restore peace in South Sudan.
I'm happy to be back after nearly 2 years, and we are taking the search for peace to greater heights. It has taken us 14 months to get to a meaningful corner. But with the assistance of our brothers who are well experienced in the process of bringing about peace, that's why I've come to Juba, so that we find a very speedy way of bringing peace in southern Sudan.
Roy was one of the leading negotiators for Machar's group at the IGAD-led peace talks. He says he became disillusioned when it appeared that behind scenes deals were being cut that would give Machar his old position back in exchange for peace. That is, the direction that the power-sharing proposal is going in, but we were unable to confirm if any such backroom deals are being made at the talks. Roy says that promising Machar that he will return to power does nothing to address the needs of the people of South Sudan. Roy was met at Juba International Airport by former rebel leader David Yao Yao. Yao Yao ended his long rebellion against the government last year and was appointed the administrator of Pibor County, which was given a degree of self-rule to promote development. Yao Yao says he is part of the government delegation that convinced Roy to abandon armed rebellion and seek peacefully resolve issues affecting local people. He says Roy's return to Juba shows that young South Sudanese leaders are taking peace seriously.
And this is part of the peace always we are fighting for. And this is a great challenge for the haulage who are using us as their broom for sweeping their rooms. So youth have really come up with the fundamental way of solving our own problem. And to me, I've seen really this is a great achievement.
Roy said yesterday that he wants Akobo in Jonglei State to be given a similar status to Pibor County to boost development there and help Low Nuer people. South Sudan's parliament is back in session today to take up the resolution issued by cabinet last Friday that would extend the tenure of President Salva Kiir and the national legislature by 2 years. Philip Thona-Leu has this report for VOA from Juba.
South Sudan's Justice Minister, Folino Wanawila, says Amendment Bill 2015 extends by 2 years the tenure of the office of the president and that of the national legislature from July 9, 2015 to July 9, 2017. The extension gives the government more time to reach a deal with the rebels and avoid a constitutional crisis. The tenure of the National Constitution Review Commission, which expired on December 31, 2014, will also be extended until the end of 2016. Wanawila says the proposal is in accordance with the 2011 Transitional Constitution of South Sudan.
This bill is drafted in accordance with the power vested in the president under Article 101F, and that is the power to initiate amendment to the bill to the constitution, and the power vested in the national legislature under Article 55(3)A and Article 199 of the Transitional Constitution 2011.
Article 55, Section 3 says, quote, the national legislature shall pass amendments to the constitution, unquote. Article 199 says, quote, the constitution shall not be amended unless the proposed amendment is approved by two-thirds of all members of each house of national legislature sitting separately and only after the introduction of the draft amendment at least 1 month prior to the deliberation, unquote. Onyoti Adigo, the head of SPLM for Democratic Change, the official opposition party in parliament, says the constitution is being misinterpreted. Adigo says the government should call all political parties to the table to ensure that the amendment is inclusive.
But if this thing is not going to take place, we are going to voice out that this amendment will be a one-sided amendment by the SPLM with their affiliation, political party affiliation, which are the parasites which just feed on them, because it's very clear in Article 3.1 of this transition constitution that the constitution is driven from the will of the people, not from the will of a particular political party.
Article 3 states the transitional constitution, quote, derives its authority from the will of the people and shall be the supreme law of the land. It shall have the binding force on all persons, institutions, organs, and agencies of government throughout the country, unquote. Manasseh Magog-Rundial, the Speaker of the National Assembly, insists the amendment is constitutional. Rundial says failure to amend the constitution will create a legal vacuum by July 2015. He says opposition politicians should get behind the amendment.
When we say we want to go for elections, people say no, people are still fighting. When we say we want to extend, you question why do you want to extend? So how can we do, how do we operate? The government has to operate legally.
Rundial says after the proposed amendment is presented to Parliament, the bill will be referred to the Parliamentary Legal Committee for public scrutiny and consultation for a period of 30 days. After that, it will be debated in Parliament and is expected to be passed easily, since most MPs are members of the ruling SPLM party. Only 6 members of Parliament are with the SPLM-DC opposition party. For BOA News, I am Philip Tonaleu in Juba.
Some South Sudanese living in Uganda say it is a bad idea to postpone the 2015 presidential election and extend the terms of president and elected officials. President of South Sudanese Students' Union in Kampala says the resolution violates the country's transitional constitution. But another group is applauding the move, saying it could pave way toward peace and stability. Bonifacio Taban has the story for VOA from Kampala.
Makwe Aguera Dels, the president of South Sudanese Student Union, calls the decision to push the election ahead by 2 years unacceptable.
We had not wanted the election to be postponed. We had wanted the election to be this year. And this is our interest, and it is breaching the constitution of our country.
Adele said achieving peace is a top priority for the people of South Sudan. He called on both the rebel and the government to reach a final peace deal for the common good of all South Sudan citizens.
So as the students, we pray that we need the government and the rebel factions to speed up and compromise and reach the peace deal so that our citizens suffering in neighboring countries like Uganda and Kenya, those who are really refugees come, and even as students, we are also affected by the war. We need peace.
But South Sudanese Advocacy Group Executive Director BL Boutros BL said postponing election will open the ways toward reaching a deal in Ethiopia. He said previous effort by government officials to carry out an election in order to legitimize the term in office was not a solution to ending the conflicts.
We have to look critically on what is important for the country. Is it the legitimacy of the government or is it the lives of the people? The country now is at war. The country now is bitterly divided. The country is now falling apart. So it is a question of holding the country together rather than the government.
Early this year, South Sudan National Election Committee announced it would go ahead. It was planned to hold a June 30 presidential election despite a failed attempt to secure enough fundings. BLC, the government now has a chance to renew its legitimacy by negotiating in good faith with rebel for the formation of transitional government of national unity.
There are other means which can be used by the government to put its legitimacy in place. One of which is to negotiate peace, to commit itself to making a peace deal. And this peace deal with the rebels would bring the transitional government of national unity. And this government would come together to unite the country to determine the next government.
Other observers agree that mounting an election without first conducting a national census was unconstitutional.
Article 194 of the Constitution states that there should be population census before the election. And Article 196 of the Constitution of South Sudan also states that the election will come only after the census has been conducted.
South Sudan government had been facing mounting criticism from the international community about scheduling election for June without having a firm peace deal in place. For VOA News, I'm Boniface Yetaban, reporting from Kampala.
A senior South Sudanese official says rebels loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar bombarded a town in Upper Nile still under government control in a four-day of fighting, just as the two sides reconvene talks in Addis Ababa. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
South Sudan's Minister of Defense Kwal Manyang says fresh fighting between rebels and government forces erupted yesterday in the northern part of Malakal capital of Upper Nile State. He says the rebels launched random bombardments on a town called Kaka in Fasoda County, not far from Malakal.
Kaka came under attack from the rebels of Riek Machar. It's under heavy artillery bombardment.
Manyang says the attacks by the rebels provoked the SPLA forces to act in self-defense.
They have taken defensive positions and they defend the town and defend themselves at the same time, and so to deter and repulse this attack.
Fighting between the rebels and government forces started on Monday in Upper Nile State. Manyang accuses the rebels of selling areas under government control with the sole intention of capturing more territories to control ahead of peace talks in Addis Ababa, scheduled to get underway today. The rebels have denied fighting in the northern Malakal area, but deny they are trying to gain territory before the talks begin. They say they killed more than 50 government forces while defending their positions on Monday. Ryan Gantaya is the spokesperson for the United Nations mission in South Sudan.
The only report we had is that in the last day, we had frequent sporadic fighting around Rank, Manu, and Nasir.
Manyang confirms at least 6 government soldiers were killed.
We had 80 soldiers wounded, and there is 6 people, soldiers, but around 50 are missing.
Both sides have violated repeatedly a cessation of hostilities agreement signed by the leaders of the two warring parties. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. President Kiir makes a push for parents to send their girls to schools. That story is coming up when we return back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
How did you get to school as a child?
My first day at school, my mom took me to school. Thereafter, my dad would give me money for transport and then I'd take myself to school.
Well, it is me that trek and go because it's not very, the school is very close to my house. So I normally trek, but under the supervision of our brothers.
My parents would drop me in a car. Public transport every now and then, but usually, most ordinarily, it was my parents dropping us.
In fact, it was so hard for us to get to schools during Sudan regimes, but as myself personally, I was lucky. My parents took me to Nairobi, Kenya. That was 1998, and it is where I studied. By then, I was 11 years old.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The Carter Center has confirmed the death of one of its aid workers in Juba and sent its condolences to the family and friends. The British aid worker was killed as he arrived at the Carter Center's compound on Tuesday night. The government is investigating the murder, and Bloomberg News is reporting that four men have been brought in for questioning. The Carter Center was founded by former U.S. President Jimmy Carter and works around the world to promote human rights, democracy, and health issues, including eradicating guinea worm disease. United Nations and top government officials are rolling out a campaign to ensure that South Sudanese girls enroll and stay in school. It's part of a UN-backed initiative to return hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese children, especially girls, back to school, who were forced out of the classroom by the conflict. For VOA News, Charlton Doki reports from Juba.
The UN says more than 400,000 children dropped out of school during the ongoing conflict, raising the number of out-of-school children in South Sudan to a staggering 1.4 million. Speaking at today's education launch in Juba, President Kiir says much more attention must be paid to girls' education.
In our society, we give less importance to education of our girls. And I have talked about this so many times, that education is not only for boys. Education must be provided for all, boys and girls. And sometimes you will find that girls may be much more brighter than the boys. So we must, therefore, give them equal opportunity.
Central Equatoria State Deputy Governor Manasseh Lomole agrees, saying educated girls means an educated society.
Our girls must be given the right and the opportunity to continue with their education and not given up in marriage for money, for cows, for cattle, for goats. When you educate these girls, you will get more money, you will get more cows, you will get more goats, and you will become even richer than you are now.
Lomole calls on teachers, chiefs and elders to ensure that all children in their villages go to school. Mr. Kiir encouraged children to study hard, noting that the country's future depends on them.
Now that we are independent, you have to focus on your education. It is your duty to learn and build this land of great abundance. Wake up the eagerness to learn. Be curious and always ask questions. Develop a critical eye, a critical ear, and a critical way of thinking. Always challenge yourself to learn and know more.
The UN Secretary General's Special Representative in South Sudan, Ellen Margaret Loy, worries that an entire generation of South Sudanese children is being affected by the conflict in what she calls an already fragile education system.
Whatever gains the country had made since independence are at risk of being halted by the conflict. Not only is a child's growth and development being held hostage by this, but so is the growth and development of the country of South Sudan.
Prior to the conflict, only 41% of South Sudan's school-age children were enrolled in school, and less than 10% of children enrolled completed primary school education. Loy says too many schools remain closed.
70% of the 1,200 schools in the major conflict-affected states are closed. forcing children out of education. This is unacceptable. I call on all parties to open these schools.
And Loy is calling on the government to ensure that it promptly pays its teachers throughout the country, including in conflict-affected states. The UN says it will invest $100 in every South Sudanese child that returns to school over the next year. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
The United Nations mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, has halted a Bor Road construction project. UNMISS says it must focus on priorities related to the ongoing crisis before it can revert back to sustainable development projects. Last year, Korean peacekeepers deployed by the United Nations in South Sudan began to work on the Juba-Bor Road after signing a contract with Jonglei state officials. Jacob Achek reports from Juba.
Last year, Korean peacekeepers deployed by the United Nations mission in South Sudan began work on the Juba-Bor Road after signing a contract with Jonglei state officials. The contract involved grading the road, which has been a major challenge to business owners trying to transport goods outside of the South Sudan capital. But this week, John Kong Nguyen, the caretaker governor of Jonglei state, told Bor officials that the second phase of the road development project is inactive. Nguyen said that while vehicle can still move from Bo to Juba, he has said that.
Unfortunately,
Nguyen said there are people within UN that are not happy with South Sudanese official. He claimed they went to, quote, sabotage any good thing that can be done to help the people of South Sudan. Nguyen says they handed a letter from Juba to terminate the road work, and now they have stopped the road work. The UN mission permanent spokesperson Herne Quinta says the UN peacekeepers from Korea and their engineers have made great progress since their arrival in Bor in efforts to improve the area economy, including work on the Bor Airport Road and the Juba to Bor Highway.
They've been relooking at their priorities because we have hundreds of soldiers who have been arriving in the last year.
Quinta says the Korean engineers are working in the protection of civilian sites to monitor activities and improve the condition of internal displaced persons residing at the IDP camps. For BOA News, I'm Jacob Achek from Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon today called the violent actions of the Islamic State and Boko Haram a grave threat to international peace and security, but said governments around the world are often to blame for fostering the appeal of the terrorist groups to the downtrodden. The UN chief told the White House-sponsored anti-terrorism summit, oppression, corruption, and injustice are greenhouses for resentment. Islamic State militants, meanwhile, are goading Italy on their social media accounts by urging jihadist recruits to go to Libya in preparation for attacks on Rome. They say the strategic location of the conflict-torn North African state is perfect. And finally, the World Health Organization says anti-Ebola efforts in West Africa are being undermined by unsafe burials and a failure to identify dozens of Ebola cases. Health officials have warned for months that to stop the Ebola virus from spreading, suspected cases must be isolated and tested, and those killed by Ebola must be buried by workers wearing special protective gear. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
Still in Jonglei State, the Danish non-governmental organization Danish Church Aid has paid compensation to a group of Bor County residents for accidentally destroying 15 homes during mine deactivation project last December. The payment is intended to reconstruct dwellings which were burned to the ground. Danish Church Aid is part of an alliance of 100 churches and humanitarian organizations that focus on alleviating poverty and assisting communities in crisis. The group's technical advisor, Michael Jack Campbell, says staff members have collected a large amount of landmines and remnants of cluster ammunitions, between March and December of last year in Bor County. Campbell says after the material was collected, it was burned in McCall Trey village, and that's where the trouble started.
One of these small arms came out of the burning pit and landed in to some grass. This grass caught fire, and due to it being a windy day and it being dry season, this fire was pushed, I think, around 2 to 3 kilometres to the nearest village. Once it got to this village, it was reported that 15 tuckles had been burnt.
Campbell says after the incident, Dunnis Church 8 staff members went to the site and photographed the scene. After consultation, he says Bor County officials and the Dunnis Church 8 organization reached an agreement to compensate each of the individuals whose homes were destroyed.
Every individual has been given the official amount that was stated on their paper. The way we came to determine the amount per house, this amount was given to us via the community. So the community sat down with the chief and they stated how much each tuckle will cost.
Campbell says on behalf of Dunnis Church 8, he offered sincere apologies for the accident and the delay in payment. He explained that their staff had to get permission and authorization from headquarters before payments could be processed. He says he is very pleased that chiefs and residents are satisfied with the way things turned out. The county's Relief and Rehabilitation Commission coordinator, James Jock Allier, says Dunnis Church 8 paid for the grass, bamboo and poles and other building materials in the amount of 27,000 South Sudanese pounds per dwelling. The total compensation for 15 homes was close to 400,000 South Sudanese pounds. Jock Allier stressed that the process was a collaboration.
The compensation that we did was not a full compensation. It was a kind of cost-sharing. Community took responsibility to do some part of the work.
Fortunately, Jock Allier says the community has a good partnership with Dunnis Church 8 and does not view their work with mistrust. He says payments were dispensed in the presence of the head chief, the Payam administrator, and other witnesses, including county officials. Jacob Achek prepared that report from Juba. And with that, we have come to the end of our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Freedom by Emmy J. Yore.
Even though sorrow lasts for a night, surely joy comes in the morning. It is time for Southern Sudan to rejoice. Of the struggle, ay, yeah, 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 freedom, ay, yeah, 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 freedom, ay, yeah, 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 freedom, mama, mama, freedom,
freedom is coming, yeah, yeah,
freedom,
freedom is coming.
Been listening to Emmy J. Yore with that song Freedom. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thank you for listening to us into your cars and homes. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
the foundation of our freedom is based on equality, is based on justice, and based on peace.